a podcast with hot takes, hot topics, with your hosts, Megan Mannering and Evelyn Schultz. This is Hot Mike.
Hello, everyone. We are back with another episode of Hot Mike, and we don't really have the element of surprise here because
no.
We came out.
He's here
to a shot, including our guest.
Yes, he is the self-described baking soda at the back of the fridge that we are pulling out.
We needed him this week,
but an all-star to us, my co-anchor and friend Larry Smith. Welcome to Hot Mike.
It is such an I'm a big fan of both of yours, so this is really cool. This is a really great way to start the new year.
Well, we're a fan of yours too, and you know we joke about him being the baking soda, but we've been asking him for a while. You know, we've been telling you that we want to get you on the podcast.
You did. I kept saying, well, let me help you find other people. So I will come on. But
You have a couple things going on in your life.
Yes.
You are a little moderately busy.
One or two.
But you know.
And our schedules don't always align.
Right. Like, it's great to see you. I see her every day. But
normally, if Larry and I are seeing each other, it's kind of the meteorologist joke, right?
Yeah.
If you're crossing paths,
very wrong.
Someone's schedule is messed up.
Yeah. But I'm so glad that we are sitting down because Larry and I, we try to have conversations in the commercial breaks.
Yeah.
And you just can't. You have 2.5 minutes, you know, and that's just not enough time. We have a lot to talk about, Larry. You have this crazy resume and wild career. We're going to get to all of it and let our listeners in on Larry Smith.
I don't think there's a person at the station who maybe has more stories from the biz.
I can confidently say no. From sitting next to you for a couple of years, no one has more stories.
I know you don't want to toot your own horn, but I think we can speak on Larry's behalf.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to get into it.
Let's hop in. All right, Larry, where does your story begin? Let's go way back, Mattoon, Illinois.
Yeah, Mattoon, Illinois, downstate. I actually, in my career, began literally in middle school. I had a video game and would record my play-by-play broadcast, making up characters. And there's a character, we won't get into this, it's too deep and too weird. We may turn people off.
But we want you to keep listening.
Yeah, exactly. We just started. Don't go anywhere. But we actually, my buddy and I still joke about this stuff like all these years later. But what I didn't know is I had this passion. I didn't know it could be a career. I had no idea. My plan was to go be a politician or an accountant or something. I mean, that was what I, when I was 13, 14 years old. So.
Holy cow. What kind of little kid were you? What were you like?
You know, good life. Had a good, my parents divorced when I was 3. Me and I had a younger sister, 3 years younger. We had a great life. There was never issues. I mean, my family encouraged me. I was really close to my uncle, my grandfather, my heart. The guy really, don't get me started. But he was my role model as a kid.
And what was his name?
Tommy.
Okay.
Tommy Estell. So, and we've done some research since then, family stuff, really crazy stuff. We've kind of found cool details about our family. But really, they encouraged me to go do everything. I'm in a small town of 20,000 people, not a lot of black people there. But I was sort of the glass ceiling breaker. I mean, I was the first to be on junior high, Mr. and Miss Court. I was the first to do this, first to do that. And I was always in the paper somehow. And so I had a great childhood. It was a lot of fun.
It's funny you say glass ceilings. I was thinking about you last night and I was thinking, what word would I use to describe Larry? And for me, I was thinking kind of a trailblazer. That's how I think of you is, you know, you forged your own path and you've been so successful. And it sounds like that started from an early age.
Yeah, I was always, I would say different. I won't say I didn't feel like I fit in because I did, but I've always, I'm a bit of a loner. You never know that by the career I chose. But, you know, a great weekend for me and my wife. I mean, we have two adult kids. We're out of the house. We're empty nesters. A great day for us is just whatever the day brings. I mean,
you're low key.
Yeah. We went to Peddler's Mall and, you know, and so we try to, you know, people will stop and say hi. And I love when you see me say, please say hi because we are here to serve you. And I love meeting all of our viewers. So I think that was one thing that I didn't really have a click. I was a guy, literally sometimes I would like drive to go to a movie by myself Friday night and sit with people who were there. Like, hey, Larry, come sit with us. Okay.
Aww.
And I'd go sit there. And I didn't want to include anybody. I didn't want to have to go where they went if I was in their car. So I could then drive myself back home with my family and that kind of thing.
It sounds like you then didn't get in trouble. You avoided any.
Yeah. I didn't. And I think because of things I did at an early age that prepared me for this career, that was always very aware. I got good advice right before I went to CNN. A gentleman who was a manager at the station in West Palm Beach said, "You're on from now on. If you go to take the trash out, if you go to get your mail, if you go down the street to get a gallon of milk, you are now always on." And be mindful of that. And so that has served me well, knock on wood, so far that I haven't had any issues.
Yeah. Definitely. Okay, student council is a big part of your story. You've told me, you know, a lot of different stories within student council, but what did that mean to your life? When did you get involved with that?
That was really from like seventh grade on. Somehow I just kept getting elected, so I guess people liked me in the school.
But the politician you talked about.
But I really, junior year in high school was a pivotal moment in my entire life. 16 years old, I ran for school president, and as a prank, someone stuffed a ballot box against me for the other guy. As a prank, well, the other guy won, and I was devastated. I just this was my whole the graduating class. I was going to do all these things. I've gone to all these seminars and conventions and all these, you know, national conferences, travel the country, and I was bummed. And I just decided I'm going to go run for. I thought about running for state. I decided to go run. I win. And literally changed my life because I'm from this small town, all these city kids from Chicago and the suburbs. And yet this little kid, the black kid from Mattoon, wins. Like, really? You know, so huge confidence boost. I don't think I have this career without that. I can still remember that moment like it was yesterday. And that was 1985.
What was your responsibility with that? And what was the experience like?
Very much like being a lead anchor of a TV station. You were the you were the face person. You ran meetings. I mean, you know, a lot of speeches. I mean, I was all over the eastern part, half of the U.S. First flight ever. I flew to D.C. when I was, you know, six. So here's a 16, 17-year-old kid. Imagine you walk into a room in a city you've never been in before. And when you walk in, the whole room stops and looks, you know, 300 people look around like, oh, there's the guy, you know. So it was odd. I think I handled it well. I didn't have any issues. But it was huge in terms of just being used to being in front of the mic, being used to talking to people and phrasing things. And so that's why I think it was such a big deal for me.
If we can, Hannah, are we able to pull up some pictures from Larry? We do have more questions for you. But while we're talking about your childhood, your teenage years, I want your live reaction. I saw this and I audibly gasped this morning because of how cute you are in that picture.
The collar, the sweater.
It's 1970s fashion, isn't it?
Oh my gosh. Okay, how old are you in this?
Probably eight years old, maybe. I think third, fourth grade, probably.
Very cute.
Yeah. You look so eager.
Yeah,
I'm going to run for student council. I'm in the paper.
Mom had great fashion sense. So,
I love that.
Yeah. Okay. That's a big collar.
Oh, yeah. We wore them like
Were they always
then.
That big and pointy? Oh, yeah. Okay.
That was styling, baby, back then. So, yeah.
What's next, Hannah? What we got?
There you go. This picture,
sophisticated.
The arms crossed.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened. There's some other cousins nearby. That was actually at my great uncle's funeral, and I don't know where I found that picture. But my friends all make fun of me because most people only see me in a suit and tie, and so they laugh. And they go, "Larry is always in a suit. Like, we think his pajamas are shaped like a suit."
You were born in a suit and tie.
That is very cute.
Very handsome.
I think we have some. Oh well, okay. So this is jumping ahead a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is now the art of the tease.
Yes.
There you go.
Quickly tell us what this is from, and we can talk about it later.
I covered four Olympics in my career. This was the last one, 2008 in Beijing. And after we were all done, we took a couple days. And this is actually an area called Sumatai that's not quite as built up, not quite as touristy. This is really what the wall looks like without having a lot of mess done to it. So that was a great, great experience. So
it's cool to see where you started and where your career took you, right? Incredible journey.
To China, yeah.
What was your first job in media?
First job was actually at a country music station in 1988 in my hometown, WLBH AM and FM. And
were you a country music fan?
No, I wasn't. So yeah, so we country music AM and easy listening FM. Uh-huh. And so that was part of it. Was I did the Mattoon Country Jamboree. Come on, top of the hour, UBI News followed by Travis Tritt in Alabama. And,
you sound really good.
Oh,
Oldie But A Goodie, 1961. Yo, Buck Owens, talk about the sale. So,
it was a great experience because I didn't have this natural resonance.
Yeah.
And so, because it was on radio, you can't see your face. So I would answer the phone, yo, Matt Toon Broadcasting, and worked on this. Mm-hmm. And it was huge to develop my voice. Mm-hmm. So it was the only station in town. And there's some stories behind that I won't get into, but it was a great experience.
It's funny because we were just talking yesterday. There's a young reporter at the station who was asking you how to breathe as an anchor, which sounds like a crazy question if you are not in news, but you do have to develop that cadence and that rhythm. So it started with radio. That's interesting.
I told myself, it takes years. Mm-hmm. You won't get it this year. You won't get it next year. It takes a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What I tell young people is write the way you talk. It should be a conversation. Mm-hmm. Don't get caught up in what you see in nightly news. And, you know, I'm David Muir tonight. I'm coming up with this, you know, title of the news. We're going to, you know, Venezuela, you know, how do you talk?
Yes. Yeah.
Every time, and we talk about this a lot on the mm-hmm. on the set, is that I want to make sure that I am talking to you as if I see you at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, gee, what do you think about UK? Well, I mean, I think UK will be fine. Guys, he's 10 games into his second year, Coach Pope. It's going to be okay. It's going to be all right.
Everybody
I would say the same thing, mm-hmm. you know, on air. So
it comes, though, from you said 30 years this week?
38 years.
Yeah. I misheard.
That's okay. Well, it literally, it's cool, but it also means that my career is older than most of my coworkers. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
perspective. Oh,
wow. I'm 32, so yeah.
38 but years.
That just means, though, that we have someone with a lot of experience to learn from.
Well, we're very lucky to have Larry.
And, I mean, you sent us the stations you've worked at. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read off the list.
It's your show.
Okay, so the radio. Then WICD in Champaign. Mm-hmm. Was that an on-air television?
First TV. I've always been on air somehow.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Then Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
Then West Palm Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Then you went from there to CNN Sports.
Mm-hmm.
Then Turner Sports. Freelance.
Yeah.
WCPO in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
WGCL in Atlanta. WJLA in Washington. And then you ended up here at LEX 18 in Lexington.
What a journey.
I know.
What a journey. Okay, and you met your lovely wife, Rita, in Knoxville?
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us the story.
Here's a funny story. So I actually had two job offers. One was in Knoxville. One was right here in Lexington at another station.
Wow. No way.
And so I thought I told you. I guess
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't share. I really don't share everything. You have to ask me, then I'll tell you.
You have to keep some things for the podcast.
Yeah. I knew one day Hot Mike's going to call. I got to save these things. Happened Knoxville, pulled the trigger first, and I drove down from Illinois, great, wonderful news director, later a GM in Kansas City. And on the way back, it's back before cell phones mm-hmm. and GPS, all that stuff, I stopped by the station here, and the news director ready to like make me an offer. And I said, no, I just came by to tell you in person that I really appreciate the time you spent with me, but I'm going to take mm-hmm. a job mm-hmm. elsewhere. That was pivotal because I would not have met my sweet Rita in Knoxville. So I was only there for like 9 months. And I've always said, God put me there long enough to meet her.
Yes.
And then there's his history.
It's funny how life works.
Can we talk about Rita for a minute?
I can, yeah, absolutely.
She's the biggest sweetheart mm-hmm. you've ever met. Yeah. What do you love about Rita?
Let's go there. How much time do you have?
So, we blow out the rest of the podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. This career's about Rita. Rita is literally our hopefully she's okay with me saying this. Our first date, and we went to go see, of all things, JFK. I got lost going to her apartment. And so I called her on a payphone. I'm like, I can't find where you're talking. And so we ended up going. We're going to see one movie. We missed that, so I was late. And we went and got pizza, which is my favorite food. So what mm-hmm. a, you know, foreshadowing there. And I said, hey, I just saw there's a movie theater nearby, a different one. Mm-hmm. JFK is playing. And I mean, she's like, yeah, let's go. I found out halfway through, she'd already seen it twice. And I'm like, oh my God, this long, dry movie. Like, why would you go? I'm driving her back. And on the way back, I'm like, she would be an awesome mom to my kids one day on the first date. So I was smitten from day one.
Oh my gosh.
And she must have had a crush on you if she agreed to see that movie a third time.
She must have in her words, a yeah, baby. So yeah, I guess so. So we were engaged 6 months later.
Oh my gosh.
We've been married. April will be 32 years.
And two children.
And two kids. Yeah, our kids are awesome. Our daughter's in grad school right now. We'll finish this summer. She'll be a bilingual clinical psychiatrist. She's on a PhD path. Mm-hmm. And my son just got a job in Cincinnati. He just got he graduated with 2 degrees also in May.
So, amazing.
Yeah. You just have the most awesome family. And I love that so often, like, your best moments with your family are the really low-key, like, we're getting a pizza. We're sitting around. We're playing games.
Yeah.
You're just – it's really sweet. Really
our daughter
sweet.
Was here for 2 weeks. And, like, one thing every night, she'd say, can we play a game? Like, yeah.
Aww.
And she's, you know, 24. And we sat down and we played – which is ridiculous, go to the head of the class. I mean, just mm-hmm. silly. But we all like to challenge ourselves mm-hmm. and trivia and all that. So yeah. Very, very blessed. I can't – my life has been blessed far beyond what I deserve.
Do you cherish these low-key moments kind of in the later half of your career after having such a busy – career, you know, you were on the road a lot, traveling out of the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was one thing, my daughter was a freshman in college. I had this moment, and I hope I don't get for Clem telling it, but I said, did I do enough? Was I around enough? Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys are my priority. She said, we always knew we were number one.
Yeah.
We knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
It was awkward for them, I think, as kids, because when you're on CNN, you get recognized everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I went to go buy a car. It was time to go buy a car. We went to, you know, CarMax, got a car. We're having a burger at Steak and Shake, and the manager is just going gaga that I'm in his restaurant. Mm-hmm. And Elijah's like, I don't know, 3-4 years old. Yeah. He turns to Rita, he goes, why is this man being so loud? And she says, well, he watched your dad on TV. He's excited. He goes, didn't he know I just want to eat my burger with my daddy? You know?
Aww.
And so they've learned where now we all just laugh about it.
Yeah.
We expected it. And I think they also embrace it. They know, well, you must mean something to this person if they went out of the way to say something to you. So I think we've all learned in this process. And yes, we do now really enjoy just any time with Reed and the kids is there's nowhere else I'd rather be.
Aww. I see you light up when you talk about them.
Yeah.
It's really sweet. Yeah. All right. I want to talk about your big break, or what you would consider your big break. Once you got on air, what was the moment where everything changed for you?
There was a moment in the spring of 93. I really want to go do a live show out on location, not just in studio. Mm-hmm. I had never done live shots, had very little experience. And the weekend producer, I finally convinced him to do that. We're at the old West Palm Beach Stadium. It's Braves Yankees. And I'm doing this thing. And what was funny was I'm out in left field before anyone gets out there. And I noticed I could sense people behind me. And so Tony Kubek, the former Yankee outfielder, was there with like their Yankee studio crew watching this 24-year-old kid do this live shot. And I was awesome. I mean, it was, you're nervous.
You got
your notes and I nailed it. I mean, it was, I'm glib. I'm funny. I'm joking. I didn't stumble. And that moment was one where they all like shook my hand and, hey, what's your story? Where are you from?
Wow.
And I'm like, oh, just Matt Toon. You know, so I didn't thought about it, but that moment changed. I began getting phone calls from agents after that and began getting phone calls from TV stations elsewhere. And that was a big thing. So I went to CNN. We had one of our young editors, tape editors, was a former CNN sports intern. She walks up one night after my Sunday night show and she says, by the way, here are the names of the top two people at CNN, their phone number. You need to call them.
Wow.
And I said, well, you know, I'm 24. I mean, it's my 1 year into my first ever sports job. I'll hold on to this and I'll call when I'm ready. So, but thank you. I called the next day. So,
yes.
And that began, Megan knows the story. So I went up there, great visit, drove up to Atlanta, met with both of them. And the key moment was their administrative assistant. She's taking me up there to the studio on the fourth floor. And she says, if you get to talk to you're talking to number two guy. If he says, let's go talk to the big guy, you'll know you're in. Well, sure enough, he says, let's go see if Bill is in. Bill was in his office.
Wow.
And that was it. And he made me promise. He said two things, the number two guy. He said, call me once a month. Let's keep in touch. And if you get an offer somewhere else, don't sign before you call me. April 1993, I knew it was it. I was hired in October, started December 1, and the rest is history. So,
wow. It's amazing. Lesson does that teach to people who are young in this industry? We've talked about this, but just making that call.
Yeah,
I mean, elaborate.
Yeah. I'm so stunned when there's so many people who have called me, reached out, or whatever. Hey, my brother's neighbor's nephew wants to get into whatever. You know what? Because I know you, here's my personal cell, and they never call. And I'm like, how do you? We've had people, and we discussed this, people who have been in this market who I've tried to mentor and just they don't get it. And it's, I don't have all the answers, but I am, you know, I am even like with the person asking, how do you breathe? I mean, I always will take time because you want to know. And if you're asking me, how do I breathe? You're really studying the art of what you're trying
to do. You
want
to improve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think most people in TV want to help the next generation,
absolutely.
Right? You want to impart that wisdom.
I had help. People did that for me.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. So for the next generation, make the call when someone suggests that.
You guys have so many resources now that I didn't have back in the 80s and 90s. So take advantage of those.
Yeah. Well, and it's all about networking, right?
Yeah.
One person somewhere, you know, the person at your station in West Palm Beach who said, call these people.
Yeah.
Change the course of your life, right?
Yeah. I can draw a line from 7th grade to today of people who have helped along the way And once their job was done, God passed me off to somebody else and somebody else. And yeah.
No, and it's cool because I see you doing that now with people in this newsroom. Mm-hmm. So you are paying it forward. We don't have all the time in the world for this podcast, which is unfortunate because your resume is insane.
It is, yes.
I'm going to read through all of the things, not all, but most of the things you have covered in your sports career. And then we're going to hit on some specifically. Let me clear up my throat here. 12 Final Fours, 7 Masters, 6 NBA Finals, 6 Super Bowls, 5 World Series, 5 Kentucky Derbies, 4 Olympics, 4 College Football National Championships, 3 PGA Championships, 3 U.S. Golf Opens, and a partridge in a pear tree. Oh, my gosh.
That's the one thing missing.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. Okay, of this long list, what sticks out in your mind, if you can narrow it down? What were the biggest moments where you just felt like, wow, I've made it?
We don't have enough time. In the, For me, I think that the 3 Olympics I did overseas, obviously 96 Atlanta was right in our backyard. Yeah. And that was, that in itself was very special. But I think the ones overseas, Athens, Torino, and Beijing, were big. Athens was just so special. I mean, it's the birthplace of the games. Mm-hmm. I'm a history nerd. If I wasn't doing this, I'd be teaching history somewhere. So, that was a really big deal. And just the people I met and the experiences, you know, there's a shot of a picture that, our shot was actually on the roof of an apartment flat with the Parthenon and the Acropolis behind us. Mm-hmm. And, the NBC Today show came up to do Larry King Live at one point. And, he was talking with Matt Lauer, and Matt goes, this is your office. And I'm like, yeah, needs a better view. I just, you know, I don't know. So he was like, what is that? I mean, Matt Lauer's asking me.
Right.
What's like for you? You know, are you kidding me? You're Matt Lauer. So, that was special. I think Beijing the same way. You know, there was a murder, American murder, on the morning of the, day one of the games. And, we were very isolated. There was a moment of angst because we thought about, you know, Munich in 1972, and like, and we're the first ones on the air. By the time you woke up on the East Coast at 6 a.m., it was 6 p.m. over there. We'd gone through this whole day of like, okay, what are we attacking Americans? What are we doing here? So those are a couple of things. I mean, there's a lot of them, but they kind of stand out. So.
Just incredible stories. One thing that kind of stands out to me is looking at the list of who you've gotten to meet, the places you've gotten to go, how this career has blessed you.
Yeah.
And you've had to work for it, obviously, too. But there are not many careers that you can say you've watched the Orange Bowl with Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Let's talk about that.
So
it's funny. You know, I'm working on this book, as you guys know, and it's a story I talk to Megan as much as anybody, my wife and my kids and then you.
More
than my kids, depending on what week it is. I mean, we talk all the time, and you're a great friend. And I don't know that you knew this story until recently, but New Year's Day 1993, my then fiance and I got a chance to go to the Orange Bowl. I don't recall we got tickets. We're in the suite at the old Orange Bowl. It's now been torn down. And we're just two kids. Like, oh, this is great. This is awesome. We're both from small towns. Uh-huh. Hadn't been to a major college game like this before. And I look down and I see there's this little label that somebody wrote Muhammad Ali next on the seat. And that one, and there's some behind me. I'm like, is that the Muhammad Ali? She's like, it can't be another one, right? We hear a commotion. These young guys walk in the room, and in walks Muhammad Ali and sits right down right here. Of course, Rita's gorgeous, so he's going to flirt with her for a moment, you know.
Of course.
And I sat and talked with Muhammad Ali and watched the Orange Bowl with Muhammad Ali.
Wow.
As Florida State beat Nebraska, and Charlie Ward, the future Heisman Trophy winner. And we're not friends. I mean, it's just luck of the draw. I mean, again, so the blessings are just literally have been smiled upon so many times.
Holy cow. I'm going to steal Ebby's question from before we were rolling. Who else have you met that you've kind of been awestruck by?
Yeah, a lot of them. I mentioned the story. I was at a party in Jupiter, Florida, and just happened to be at the same table watching this band with Vanilla Ice. And I went, oh, dude, I rarely do this, but I got it to come. You're Vanilla Ice, you know. So many, you know, funny picture there of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I was on the NBA TV set and having him teach us the art of the skyhook, and I'd interviewed Kareem several times before, so that went really well. Obviously, I think I mentioned Magic Johnson. I don't know if I mentioned on camera here, Magic Johnson.
Tiger Woods?
Tiger Woods several times. So actually had there's a picture. I don't know if you guys have it.
We do have it. We can either edit it in or pop it up.
Yeah,
but
there's a, you know, I call myself the Tiger Killer because when I began covering, this is it right here.
Wow.
This is actually 2006 at Medina Country Club in suburban Chicago. That was the old athletic club. And this is when Tiger had won. He had become the first golfer ever to win the PGA twice in the same location. The PGA Championship moves year to year. And that was actually a private conversation I had with Tiger that I've never shared with anybody, and I'll keep that private. Mm-hmm. But it was big for me because I call myself the Tiger Killer because every time I went, he didn't win. And so my producer and I both were like, oh, my God, dude, he finally won one. We got to go talk to him. It was a nine-minute interview. We got back to the sat truck. I'm like, how do we cut this down to 2.5? It was so good. Mm-hmm. And the moment, and I always tear up, so if I don't do it here, the cool thing about that, his dad had just died earlier that year. And they were so close. He and Earl were so close. I asked him, I said, when you, and he just won the British and the PGA back-to-back. Mm-hmm. I said, 2006, now that it's over, how will you look back and think about just this great year? And he goes, lost my dad. Oh. And he gave us, I get chills every time I tell the story. He had the greatest 60-second anchor of my answer of my life. Mm-hmm. And he said, the call on a Sunday night, not about golf, just, he was, hey, Sam, what are you up to? And he said, I never knew why he called me Sam. Like, we went and looked, and we couldn't find what he told that anywhere else. We did a search. And he said, it was just about, not about golf, but about just my dad and me. He later named his daughter Sam Alexis. And so I went to our people. I said, let's archive, find that, and let's play that. We can tell you why he's naming his daughter Sam. Mm-hmm. It's because of what his dad called him.
That's so neat. And that just shows that sports are more about just the game, right? Yeah. It's the human connections and the stories that go way beyond the golf course.
I think having a news background, my first couple of jobs were more in news, was pivotal for me because I learned how to tell a story and then got to sports. So even when I do sports, if I'm doing CNN or NBA TV or I do the play-by-play in Georgia still, my boss is here. Our bosses are great, allow me to do other projects. Past couple years, WNBA show, I think of it more about let's tell the story. Yeah, you know what they score, they rebound, or they pass, whatever. Who are these people? Let's get behind the stories. I think that's what makes it special.
Definitely. Yeah. Going into all of those interviews over the years with these huge names, I mean, Tiger Woods, Magic Johnson, whoever it was, how did you approach those interviews? Were you nervous? Were you freaking out beforehand? Or were you just, you know, playing it cool? Like, what was your approach?
Yeah, sometimes you get, you know, Tiger was a big one because I hadn't before. What's funny, kind of setting the tone, another story was in 1994, my first few months at CNN, I got to interview Hank Aaron on the anniversary of breaking Babe Ruth's record. And I'm 25 years old. Mm-hmm. I turned 25 right before I got to CNN. Mm-hmm. And I'm walking in like, oh, he's probably going to, when I got the assignment, like, he's going to go, really? I'm Hank Aaron. You're bringing this kid in to talk to me?
Aww.
He was the exact opposite. Totally cool. Mm-hmm. And he disarmed me with his kindness. Mm-hmm. It was my last day working before I went to go get married. Aww. He was on the Turner Board of Directors. So he was always around. Yeah. I didn't know that at the time, that how much he was around. A couple of months later, that summer, he's walking through the building with a group of people. Mm-hmm. I was going out to go downstairs to get lunch in one of the restaurants. And I just held the door open for the group because they're coming through. And I saw him there. I didn't look at him. Mm-hmm. I looked away and I didn't want to bother him. He breaks away from the group. He stops. He said, hey, how was the wedding? And I'm like, again, like with Matt, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I'm nobody to you. But that disarmed me and let me, it reminded me, I'd interviewed big names before, but that was a big one. And just that people, you know, the big people, they're people too.
They put their pants on one leg
at a time. Yeah.
At least we hope they do. I guess we don't know.
We don't want to know if they don't. Yeah, exactly.
This is another interesting person, and I like how you wrote this. Bumping into Jamie Foxx and showing bro love on South Beach. What is that? What does that look like? During Super Bowl week, by the way.
So it was Super Bowl 1999, Broncos and Falcons, and I was not covering it. I was going down actually playing some golf with some friends. We're on South Beach, and it's like 2 in the morning, and I'm at some party with Stuart Scott, the late ESPN sports anchor, and Warwick Dunn, who's a former NFL player. And it was Dennis Rodman's party, and I was walking back with a couple of buddies going back down to meet some other friends and maybe just have a quick Cohiba and going back to my hotel. And it was Versace's mansion, and he had just been murdered like months earlier, like right there on the sidewalk. So everyone walking by, including Jamie Foxx in this way by himself, were like, look at the mansion, like, oh, wow, okay, you know. Jamie Foxx and I bump into each other. Now, here's the thing. I'm a kid from Mattoon. I don't walk around thinking, well, you should know who I am. I mean, I just – so I look up. It's Jamie Foxx.
he looks up and goes, it's Larry Smith. And so we're like, hey, what's going on? And so we just like, but what's up, man? How are you doing? What are you up to? Man, I'm just busy. He was shooting Any Given Sunday, but of course they don't talk about when they're doing that. So hey, you look good. Yeah, you too, man. Like, let's work. Like, we're talking. So we go to walk away, and the guys with me, and they go, you know Jamie Foxx?
No, it's a brother thing, you know. It's not at all.
Bro,
it's
love.
A, you know, yeah.
That is so, bro love.
Yeah. So it was very funny. Every time I saw Jamie, two or three times after that, usually at the Super Bowl, he was always part of the Super Bowl at some party somewhere. We bump into each other at a party, and we would do the same thing like we knew each other forever. It was a cool moment.
That's really neat.
This is why you are writing a book, because you have so many stories.
Yeah.
So many. Okay, a hole in one at a friend's wedding. What's this?
1998, Fring got married in Boca Raton. I had not played in 8 months. I was terrible, having a bad day, and it was a prize hole, and it was only like 150 yards. And it was golf. I had a 5-wood and just teed up high. Mm-hmm. And my buddy behind me, the guy goes, he's hitting a 5-wood. He goes, yeah, he's not very good. I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? Really? You know,
well, that's kind of what that's the motivation you need.
I was mad.
The haters.
You're my
the
friend. Really?
You've seen me.
My iron game's terrible today. What are you doing? I teed it up high. I'm like, let me just pop. It's over water. Let me just pop. I don't want to go get wet. Let me just pop it up. Popped it up perfectly. It bounced 3 times into the hole. And the guy said you could hear the screams all over the whole golf course of the yell. My buddy got me, grabbed me. He was a former college quarterback. He picked me up. You know, he's shaking me, and everyone's going nuts. So every year on the anniversary, my friend's wife would call and curse me out and say, "You got a bigger cheer than I did at the reception."
Aww.
But I still love you. So
that's like your equivalent of wearing white to the wedding.
Yes. Yes.
You made it all about
a hole in one.
Exactly.
And your friend's wedding day.
Yeah.
That is a great story, though.
Really. So. I'm curious, in this long career, you've done these amazing things. At some point, you come to Lexington. Mm-hmm. What about LEX18 appealed to someone who's had all of these huge moments on the world's biggest stages?
That's a great question. It's an easy answer. The people here, the stability here, and the management. I had my last two stops in Atlanta and Washington were horribly managed. And have me back another show next year, and we'll talk about that. For the first time, I really interviewed managers more than I had any other place. It was just like, I want to be there. That's great. Yeah, hire me. This was when I'm like, do you have a plan? Because, I mean, I just come from Washington, D.C. We took our show from third place, last place, to a virtual tie for first place. I then began doing, that's the morning show, began doing the 5 o'clock show. Those ratings went up. And on top of that, my family, I was commuting to the job, so I had a lot of free time. I like making money, so I did
sure.
So I did two shifts. And despite all that, they didn't re-sign me. And I'm like, and they said, we're going in the direction. I said, well, I took you up. Another direction is not where I want to go. So absolutely.
Yeah.
As a businessman myself, let's not, it's pointless for you to sign me what you're paying me. The ratings fell 80%.
80%?
Wow. Which means if you're selling an ad for $1,000, that ad is now worth only $200. And it was a catastrophic thing for them that they didn't foresee. Did I gloat? Not really.
Maybe just a little bit. Just a little bit.
I'm mentioning it. 7 years later, 8 years later. So, but no, this was really important to be here, to be, and their management here won me over. I work with Mary Jo Mitchell, Mary Jo Perino, Mary Jo Ford. I met with, she worked with us briefly at CNN Sports for a couple of years. So I knew right away it was a great station just because of Mary Jo. And that's how I ended up here and loving it. It was awesome.
I remember the day you came because I was a producer at the time. It was 2020. And maybe it was an interview or maybe you had already taken the job and were just visiting. I'm not sure exactly the behind the scenes there, but there's a photo you sent of you and Nancy Cox.
Yeah.
And I said to someone in the newsroom, I said, I took this photo because.
You did. That's right. That's
because
right.
I think you and Nancy had come up and said, can someone take a photo of us? And I was sitting right there. And I guess they knew you were coming to be the main evening anchor alongside Nancy at that point. So.
Yeah, it wasn't official.
But it was
during COVID. And because it was such an important position, I think people being hired were being hired like sight unseen, only through Zoom.
Yeah, you couldn't really travel a lot at that point.
Right. So we got special permission from court for me to come in. I took a COVID test that morning. to say, yeah. I'm clean. Yeah. Here's my paper, fresh. Mm-hmm. It's right here. And we just felt it was important that we all have dinner here in town and spend the day with Nancy. And we hit it right off. We're still great friends to this day.
Yeah. You've been a great addition to the station.
Oh, yeah.
I say that as someone who started around the same time you did.
Yeah, so. I started after.
Started out together.
It seems like you've been here forever, I will say. But and that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. Okay.
I'm curious, what is harder and maybe what's easier about working in local broadcast compared to network level?
You have less support. Your staff is smaller. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you have to really rely on and communicate better. When you're at CNN, there's so many different hands. And I want to say this too very quickly, that when people in – I'll make this very brief. When people talk about your, gee, this person has that or it's whatever, there are so many hands that touch a script before it goes on air that you don't just walk up and go, let me start talking. And that makes the difference. Mm-hmm. I've had conversations here locally, people who say, well, I watched the video and they say this, and they take that as gospel truth. And I was saying, I'm like, okay, well, I'm doing a one-on-one with the superintendent like tomorrow. Guarantee you that's not the way it is. But we're always combating that. And so I want people to understand that if it's like what we're doing, it goes through a lot of hands. I can't just walk up and start talking because I won't last very long. So
that's part of the news gathering process.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there are so many people behind the scenes you don't see who are a part of that. So, but the big thing I think is just size of staff is the biggest, smaller. Mm-hmm. You have to really rely on people. Today, people a lot younger have less experience. Mm-hmm. And for me, as one of the old guys, the sages, the gray beards, I shave today, the gray beard, to make sure that I'm patient. I never take anybody deep. I will not. There's this, obviously, last week, there was an issue, a new network anchor kind of had a meltdown on day one. You do not do that. Mm-hmm. I've never taken anybody. The people behind the scenes you don't see, they're not trying to mess up. Mm-hmm. Right. So why would I embarrass you? Okay, we're teammates on this. Mm-hmm. If it went wrong, let's figure out how to do it right and go from there.
Not to call out names, but it reminds me of the very iconic clip. Was it Bill O'Reilly?
Yeah.
So we'll do it live, which
with maybe a little bit of profanity sprinkled in.
Yeah, I won't say all the profanity, but that's another example of what you don't do and what you are not.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I've never done that ever, and I will never do that.
Yeah.
Listen, we get paid what we get paid as anchors because we're the last line of defense. Mm-hmm. So even it's like the goose on the water, the duck on the water, right? They're cool and serene, but it's crazy underneath.
Yeah.
You guys be the crazy when it comes to us. You're never going to know because I'm going to make sure
you're
that it's
cool and casual.
You know, yeah. That's what I get paid to do is when everything else fails, I got to find a way to make sure that it's still, if we're on camera, to keep going.
Have you ever had a moment in your career that was, you're like, you leave the set and you're just.
I've seen it.
More. You've seen it?
I've been there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to tell the whole story, but.
I've only lost my cool twice. Megan saw one of them. It was here.
And I'll never forget it.
And she'll never forget. What was funny was it was so out of character that as I left the building, they're all like, did you just see that? They're all texting like, Larry just, oh my God. So it was one of those, like I came back later, but I apologized to every single person in the room. And the person that I had issues with apologized before I left the building.
Oh yeah.
It was a teaching moment for that person. Mm-hmm. And the byproduct of that is that person worked on not doing that again. Mm-hmm. It was something that happened not just to me, but to several other people. Mm-hmm. It was a pattern this person did. And everyone were like, yeah, it needed to be said, and you need to be the one to say it. I still didn't like that, but I'm happy that we're still friends. Mm-hmm. We still communicate.
Yeah.
This person understood that I'm upset with you, but it's because I love you, because I like you. I want the best for you.
You're a dad.
As an innocent bystander during this ordeal, it did feel like when your dad loses it, you know,
he
finally gets
there.
To the breaking point and like you're the kid and you do that last annoying thing and the dad, he's done. He snaps. Uh-huh. I mean, everybody that was in the newsroom at the moment did have their headphones in. I guarantee you everyone was muted because they were... They were listening to what was going on, but it needed to be done. And it's one of my favorite moments in this newsroom, Larry. I'll be totally honest. Yeah. Hey, everybody loses their cool. It was a human moment.
Yeah.
It was a human moment.
Yeah. Well, and I was talking with you and you were fresh on the anchor desk.
Yeah.
And what I was saying was really important to you and me.
Yeah.
And I was trying to be a friend and a big brother to say, and you didn't do anything wrong, you know that. But just in terms of, hey, understand that, that sometimes this happens. Let me give an example of that. And this person just jumped in the conversation as they did. I went, ugh, you know. So to get your perspective is much funnier because I was the one doing it. But the reaction later was, the next day I went to apologize to the managers. They go, you're fine. You've already heard.
I was pretending to type, I think, at that minute. And if you had looked at my screen, it would have been a bunch of random letters because I wasn't actually typing.
Well, and that's another take. There are so many takeaways from Larry's career and life, but you can make a mistake, but don't make it more than once, right? That's something that college professors told me, right? Like, you will make mistakes. Mm-hmm. We all do. Hopefully they're not all public. But but as long as you learn from it and keep it moving.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Most people in this, most people in this business, 95%, have a good heart and they have the best of intentions. And this person just, in this person's life, had never learned this lesson. Yeah. And like I said before, the great thing is that every time this person has come back, they no longer work here. We all keep in touch with this person. We all communicate, comes back to Lexington still, hangs out with people. And I'm a big fan of what they're doing in their life.
Yeah.
And while I hate that it happened, I'm also happy it happened because this person grew from it. And now in their situation now, they're a better journalist, a better employee, a better friend because of that. Just unfortunately, I had to be the conduit.
Well, you do a lot of growing up in this job.
You do.
That's for sure.
You have, right?
We
all have.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do have a question, and I don't want to put you on the spot and make you emotional. What would your grandpa say about your career?
That's a good question, Abby.
He'd be proud.
Yeah.
We were very close. Yeah. Yeah. I'll leave it at that.
I don't want to make you but yeah, you know, you think about the people who came before you who they might not have even imagined all that you would do.
Yeah.
Maybe they knew you'd be successful, but
well, you never know that. you know, he was somebody who quit school in ninth grade to go work. I mean, that's you know, but again, he was somebody that was Black African American in a white town. That was integrated in the 19-teens. I mean, there was no Black school like in the South. I mean, everyone went to this school. Didn't mean there wasn't racism. He was always amazed. I mean, I got a key to the city in 1998 and, he was in his final year. He didn't feel like going out to it. So, but as I walked to the door, he just said, I'm so proud of you.
Aww.
You know, he couldn't imagine his grandson.
Yeah.
Being honored by the town that he called home since he was a kid. So I go back and visit his grave every year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So good guy.
I love it. And I think it's really special that you do pay it forward and you help younger people in the industry. You help people
us
in this newsroom. And I see how you are with your kids and the lessons that you've taught them. So it's really, really admirable.
I appreciate that.
We're so lucky to have you here, Larry.
We got to look forward to the book. That's where that's your true tell all. You have space in a book to tell all of these stories that that you have.
Yeah. It's I think it'll be good. It's done. I didn't like the flow of it. That's why I'm holding off. When I was going through it, I'm like, this is it's fun getting there. And then it just became a list of like, well, then I went to the NBA finals and then, you know, so, you know, Will Smith watched it. What funny story, Will Smith. The song Switch was out. He was going to be the halftime performer.
Oh, I love that song.
And my two favorite song of his. And so he's coming out for rehearsal. We were always the first ones in the arena doing live shots from noon on. And I'm doing a live shot. He comes to the vomitorium and he's singing the national anthem. And as he passed me, he would go, bunch of bombs in the air, like back on my shoulder. And I'm laughing and I'm trying. And then he did it two more times. Like he went back again. So as he's rehearsing, DJ Jazzy Jeff walks out, right? And again, DJ Jazzy Jeff knows me. I mean, I'm stunned. Like, how do you know? Oh, I'm on CNN. Yeah. Okay. Great. Yeah. And so he's like, man, he did you wrong. So he does a little dance stuff to move. He and the dancers all come off. And Jeff goes, hey, listen. He goes, man, I told my man Larry that tonight at halftime of the show, he's come out and do that with you. He's, yeah, man. Yeah, Larry, do that, man. You do that. Come out. Yeah, absolutely. It was hysterical. I mean, it went viral before things went viral because it was such a funny moment.
Can we find that somewhere?
I haven't looked for it. This is back before TikTok and Twitter.
We'll get on that.
Yeah.
We will get on that. I love it. Larry, we could talk all day.
We're going to have you on again.
You will come on again.
Yeah.
You are on that short list. You're coming back.
There you go.
You're coming back.
6-month window, then put the box back in the back of the fridge and
the baking soda goes back. But last question for you, heading into 2026, what are you looking forward to this year?
The book would be great.
I want to get that done, and some ideas in terms of going out to the East Coast and seeing some friends and hopefully promoting it on stations out there. Mm-hmm. You know, other side projects that I get to do, I'm excited about that. And really just seeing kind of our daughter will get her master's. We look forward to supporting her with that. And just hanging out with Rita. Just, you know, we love hanging out.
Finally
love
getting that deck done.
The deck is almost done.
Please.
How long has that taken?
You don't want to know. Oh. So, yeah, because they do great work and they're great people. So I don't want to be negative because I would
projects always take longer than you.
Yeah, I would recommend them. I can't say somebody else would have been faster, but it'll get done here shortly. And spending that time, just enjoying every day is a blessing. Uh-huh. You know, I don't celebrate my birthday's in November. I don't celebrate my birthday, and the reason why is because every day truly is a celebration. Aww. I wake up every day and I'm so thankful I get to try to be better than I was yesterday.
We gotta live like Larry.
Live like Larry.
Took a long time to get here. So enjoy your time.
Decades of wisdom.
Absolutely. If I can gush just for a second, but I always tell people when I meet viewers and they, you know, are talking about the show, I say, I feel so lucky to sit between you and Bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, powerhouses and the wisdom that you have, the professionalism that you bring to this newsroom. I feel so lucky to learn from you guys. And you've just been not only a great co-anchor, but a great friend who's checked in on me. And I just love you, Larry.
Yeah, same here.
You and your family.
Love you guys too. And and same thing. I mean, I see you all the time, so I brag on you all the time. I don't see you all the time.
I wish we got to spend more time together.
I do too. Yeah. We gotta get that lunch sometime. But I would say both of you, watching your career take off here, I cannot be prouder of both of you. And and there's a love as well. You know that. So we've had this conversation. So I just again. Being here, you guys working with you every day is part of my daily joy that I look forward to just spending the time every day and doing what we should be doing as a TV station here in Lexington.
We could gush all day.
Yes, we
about
could.
Each other.
Yeah. Hot Mike gets a little sappy from time to time.
But this was so good to have you on, Larry. We appreciate
long
you.
Long time coming. Awesome.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate
it. We love it. All right. Larry Smith, the legend. We love you here at LEX18 and all over. Thank you so much for joining us. And to our listeners and our viewers, thank you as always for tagging along. We will have another wonderful episode of Hot Mike coming up next week. We'll see you next time.